And joining us on the Revel Wireless Hotline, she covers the Browns and has for many years for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Mary Kay Cabot. Mary Kay, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dick.
Well, let's talk about the schedule, and we'll start with this. The Browns get to open at home. I know that's kind of a tradition with this football team, to pretty much to have home openers. I think the good news, if there's good news about the toughest part of your schedule having to be played at any point, but having it in weeks 2 and 3, and it looks to me at Baltimore, at Minnesota, in those second and third weeks after the home opener against Miami, if you're going to have to go against two playoff teams, of course, one of them the defending champs, Super Bowl champs, you do it then. I mean, if it's got to happen, and it had to happen, that if it happens earlier, better than later, do you think?
Yeah, I would think so. Hey, why not bring on the defending Super Bowl champs right away, see where you're at, and get this ball rolling. So it is a very exciting first part of the schedule, and I don't think this is a team that would, be overlooking the opener and going right on to Baltimore, but boy, that definitely is a game that will be circled on the calendar. There's so much intrigue. Of course, you've got Paul Kruger coming over from the Ravens. It's going to be a huge game for him. You know, Joe Flacco coming off that amazing season in the Super Bowl. So, if you look at the early part of the schedule, there are a lot of home games, but those two away games loom very large.
Yeah, they do. And you mentioned it with the Ravens, not only the Kruger factor, the fact that they've lost so many people and that they're really redoing a lot there. I mean, they've got to get people acclimated to that team, that system. And again, as new as the Browns are in so many ways, starting with the head coach and the coaching staff and all other elements, the Ravens have some transitioning to do as well. And my sense is that, in week two, it's still early for that, and you're still probably going through that process as a team.
Well, you are, but you know what? I mean, just when you think that, hey, what is Ozzie Newsome doing in terms of losing all of these guys? They go out and sign an Elvis Dumervil, and I thought that was a tremendous, tremendous save, by the Ravens after losing the guys that they did, including Paul Kruger.
Right.
So, I think that when you have a Terrell Suggs and an Elvis Dumervil there together, it seems to me that they're not going to miss a beat from the dominant defense we all know them to be. And, good job by them for pulling that back together.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then the three home games right after that stretch of back-to-back road games, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Detroit. The tough part of this is the quick turnaround between the Cincinnati and Buffalo game, because they're going to face the Bills on Thursday night, but they're going to face them at home, and it's a Bills team that will have a new quarterback, whether he is Kevin Cobb or perhaps, some people say probably, but perhaps a rookie who will be selected next week in the draft for Buffalo. I think from that standpoint, those are two pluses for the Browns to have this first primetime game since 2009. You know that crowd in that stadium is going to be stoked.
Yeah, it'll be very, very interesting to see, again, who the quarterback will be. There's a lot of talk that, that they will go ahead and pick Ryan Nassib. Doug Marrone, who actually interviewed for the Browns job at one point during the coaching search here, he now is the coach of the Bills, and there's a lot of talk that he will draft Ryan Nassib with that number 8 pick. Ryan Nassib is somebody the Browns have also looked at. They brought him in for a private workout. So it'll be really interesting to see who the quarterbacks are for that game.
Yeah, and then it's on the road for 2 weeks at Green Bay, at Kansas City. And I think this is interesting, too, that when the Browns see Baltimore again, now we're in the early part of November, it's followed by a bye week and then at Cincy, but then back-to-back home games against the Steelers and Jaguars. And right in this sort of middle area, Mary Kay, I get the sense that, this is kind of a point where you're defining where you are. I mean, I know we'll know and we'll get a lot of clues maybe in the first quarter of the season, but it's at this point where you've had those three straight home games. How do you handle the two in at Green Bay? Always going to be tough. Kansas City, maybe not so much with all the newness and transitioning there. But, a chance to kind of get into this middle area, and by the time you get into playing Pittsburgh and Jacksonville at home, perhaps if anything good is going to start happening with this team, we'll know then. Or the opposite. I mean, we can always, you know, anything can happen during the course of this year. But I just get a sense that what the Browns will be will kind of be defined quite a bit then, because by then you figure the systems of this 3-4, Ray Horton will be learned, and maybe not totally, but guys will get more comfortable with that. And on the offensive side, North Turner and Rob Chudzinski's offense, you know, guys will perhaps be feeling a groove with that.
Well, when I look at this middle part of the schedule, the thing that really stands out to me, Vic, is once you get past the Buffalo Bills there early on that Thursday night game, you head into Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, Alex Smith, Joe Flacco. Then you go Andy Dalton, Ben Roethlisberger. A couple of weeks later, you find yourself against Tom Brady and then Jay Cutler. I mean, it doesn't end. This is a year of some really, really good quarterbacks that they're going to be facing. So it's no mystery, you know, why they are working so hard on finding pass rushers to disrupt those quarterbacks. Boy, you look at this, and the defense is going to have its hands full.
Yeah, no, it will, and you're absolutely right. It stays true to why you wanted Paul Kruger, why you wanted to bring in a Desmond Bryant, and why, and we could talk about this a little bit about the draft, that why I think adding more of those components, those pass rushers to this front, you almost can say you can't have enough of them. I know cornerback's important too, but I think the pass rushers are the real key. We're visiting with Mary Kay Cabot. She covers the Browns for the Cleveland Plain Dailer on the Rebel Wireless Hotline here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Mary Kay, the news conference yesterday, Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi, the pre-draft conference that every team basically has, didn't shed a lot of light on anything that this team would be doing. Nobody gives up those secrets generally. But again, we came away, I think, with the thought, consistent with what Joe Banner had said also at the combine, that this team's thrust is, as you just said, to upgrade that pass rush, make this defense as strong as possible. And it just sounds to me like this defensive theme is going to remain strong.
Well, you know what? I would have to think so. Again, it's hard to read the tea leaves. We don't know exactly what they're thinking. But if you look at the top of the draft and where they're positioned right now at number 6, you have to think some of the best pass rushers will be available there. When you talk in terms of cornerback, again, you need them and you need a lot of good ones. But I would have to tend to think we've heard so much talk from them about rushing the passer, and we have heard so much about so many of the good, potentially dominant pass rushers in this draft. I would have to think that if they had the choice between those two positions, that they might go with the pass rusher, who will disrupt that quarterback and affect the game, you know, potentially on every single play. So, I would have to think right now that they're looking long and hard at some of those guys. It's going to be very, very interesting because, you know, we've heard a lot about the Jarvis Joneses, the Barkevious Mingos, Ziggy Ansah. There's a ton of them up there at the top. I would not be surprised if they end up with one of them.
Yeah, I'm so inclined to think that that's the case. And when I say that and people come back at me and social media or email and say, well, they got to get that corner. They got to get that corner, and all this fascination over D. Milner. And I respect what D. Milner is all about. I think he's a talented guy, but I'm still inclined to think that when you're investing a 6th overall pick, you want that playmaker, difference maker. And I think Milner, while shutting down receivers is a critical thing, and the thought of him pairing up with Joe Hayden or another strong corner pairing up with Hayden is something that would make this defense very strong, I still think it's stronger if you have a Deion Jordan, for instance, from Oregon, getting into that passer along with Paul Kruger and everyone else to force turnovers or, if not cause the fumble, get the sack, but force the hurried throw that turns into a mistake.
Right. I mean, I think when you're looking at the number 6 pick, again, you like you said, you want an impact player that is going to, and it's somebody that you are hoping is going to make a Pro Bowl, a lot of Pro Bowls, and be a star, if not even a superstar. I like to look at either a quarterback up that high or a pass rusher. Those are usually my top two choices, although a lot of people, as we know, take the left tackles up that high because everyone needs a really good left tackle. But yeah, for the Browns' purposes, we know they're pretty well set there. So I would say either quarterback or pass rusher. And there's just, I do not get the feeling they're going quarterback at number six, even though they are really, really working hard on all of these quarterbacks, doing their due diligence. In my mind, at this point, it seems as though that would be more of the scenario if they trade down and maybe pick up that second-round pick where you might be able to find an E.J. Manuel or someone like that.
Yeah, the trade scenario is the intriguing thing, too. And we asked those questions of both Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi yesterday. And the most interesting thing, I don't know if this is a shock, but Joe said at some point we're going to have talked with every team in the league at some point before the draft, and that it's calls initiated by the Browns or calls that other teams are initiating to them. And I don't know how likely the scenario is. It seems to me that it would be the favored way to go as long as, A, they know that they're going to get a player they want in the first round targeted in whatever, however far down they have to move to do that. And then the second thing is maybe targeting who that, if indeed there's a second round pick to be gained from this, who that guy is, right? So you're giving up this sixth choice to somebody, but the key to me is what do you come away with just other than to say, yeah, but we got the second round pick. I mean, I think it's all about who you get.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing about this second round is I think there are going to be a number of really, really good players available in that second round. It's a round that you want to be in because there are positions that are deep and that stretch into that round, including some of the cornerbacks and the defensive backs that we've heard about. And on a quick note on Dee Milner, although I see what all the fans see and some of the stuff that we've talked about, but now some of the experts are even putting Dee Milner number two on their list behind Houston's DJ Hayden. So when that starts to happen, I mean, when you're at number six, I think you want to get the best or one of the best players at your position at that position.
Yeah.
Now there's starting to be talk that perhaps he might not even be the top cornerback in the draft. Mike Mayock has him number two now. But trying to pick up that second-round pick, you would probably have identified a couple of guys, not necessarily pinned down to one person, but perhaps a cornerback or a starting safety there, maybe even a wide receiver or a quarterback.
And it's so funny how the stock on these guys changes when they really haven't done anything, right? I mean, they've gone through their combine, their workouts, and that's about it. Maybe some visits, but generally speaking, you know, it always amazes me how opinions will just be altered. A lot of that influenced, I know, by who the draft analysts talk with in the league too, you know, and they kind of get that buzz and factor that into their thinking. But that is such a great point. We just saw mini camp wrap up the first phase of this, the 3 days that were held in Berea. What are some of your thoughts on and biggest takeaways from what happened on the field?
Well, one of the first things that I thought was really great was in talking to DeQuell Jackson. I think a lot of people thought, you know, oh boy, this is, the sky is falling for DeQuell, and now, you know, he's in a 3-4. He's not going to excel. He's as excited as anyone about this new defense, in part because of all the blitzing that they're going to be doing. He will be very involved in a lot of that, and what he calls the cross dogs that you see from, like, the Baltimore Ravens doing, where you take the two linebackers and stunt them, and they cross each other and go in opposite directions and things like that. So I really do think that having DeQuell, who is, you know, basically your leader on defense, being so excited about this is a great, great thing. It is going to be such an attack-minded defense. Guys are excited about that. Jabal moving over to right outside linebacker, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. The right side, now even he's standing up, so he feels as though it's going to be a lot better for him than what he did on the right side when his hand was in the dirt, wasn't comfortable there. That's one thing that we really have to watch. Brandon Whedon, you know, he's heading in here as the established, you know, clear-cut starter right now. That's how it's starting out. But I think that Rob Chudzinski was very, very quick to say it's early. You know, he threw a little bit of water on the notion that, you know, this thing is any kind of written in stone yet, and you know, basically just said let's slow down here a little bit and let this thing play out.
Yeah, I think the thing that really jumps out is that that offense also moves everybody, I mean, offense and defense, moving faster, but such a quicker pace to this offense And you could see how North Turner is emphasizing to Brandon Weeden, you know, get the ball out of your hands quicker, make decisions quicker. And the thing that Weeden immediately loves is they have him throwing downfield deep. I mean, his first throw of minicamp was a deep route and to Josh Gordon. And I think that was almost like a tone setter in my mind. It's like, you know, this is what you're going to get to do in this scheme. And you could see how enthusiastic and how much he's embracing it.
Well, and yeah, and not only Brandon, but right away on the very first day, you heard Greg Little saying, this offense is a wide receiver's dream. So these guys are really excited about it, and we've seen some of the results of it here in 2007 with Derek Anderson, you know, Braylon Edwards, you know, and Kellen Winslow and those guys that were here, and what you can get out of an offense like this. So I know everyone here is hoping for the same results, but Brandon's excited. I think he's ready to really, you know, dig in and work as hard as they want him to. And by all accounts, this vertical passing game should suit him very well.
Mary Kay, thank you so much for taking the time to join us, and we will definitely have to do this again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Vic.
All right. Mary Kay Cabot from the Cleveland Plain Dealer joining us here via the Revel Wireless Hotline on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.